This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with this Wake Up Call. Big, big news in the NFL as Tyreek Hill is going to the Miami Dolphins. And boy, it has become an amazing seismic shift of talent. Either going to the AFC from the NFC or staying in the AFC, but just on to a new team. It has been a wild ride this offseason so far for this league. We got Eric Edholm coming up at 40 past the hour, 35 minutes from now. We're going to break a lot of those stories down, a lot of it on the Tyreek Hill trade. What does it mean for the Dolphins? Again, as they're trying to chase Buffalo, and even New England for that matter, as the Patriots were a playoff team last year, they're trying to get in that mix as well. And think about this, if you are a Dolphins team or you are a Colts team, you know, teams that played, you know, well enough to be in the playoff hunt at the end and then didn't quite get there, you're looking at that conference and going, look, I got my own division, and then I look at that AFC West and how incredibly loaded that is, and you go, oh God, we have got to do it. And the Colts picked up Matt Ryan, and now the Dolphins have added Tyreek Hill to their offense. We'll get to that with Eric Edholm. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up as well. And I also want to get into the NBA because there's some good news coming for one particular NBA team that has been waiting for this bit of news for quite a while. We'll get to that story coming up. But we also have Throwback Thursday today, going back 21 years, 2001. As we sort of remember the day and sort of, you know, remember the bird that lost its life at a spring training game in Tucson, Arizona, after he was pulverized and just disintegrated by a Randy Johnson fastball. That happened on this date back in 2001. So we got some 2001 music for you. It's all coming up here in hour number two. But again, a lot of the focus is on the NFL once again. Boy, the NCAA just cannot seem to buy, for whatever reason, any sort of attention. Because once they get rolling, like, the NFL just comes swooping in and goes, yeah, by the way, we're making this move, and that move. So enjoy your college basketball. Yeah, the NFL, it's been seismic over the last few days, really seismic. And yet again, we got another story that shakes everything up in that crazy AFC. All right, good, the bad, and the dumb is coming up next on a Throwback Thursday. I'm Tony D. Ron Culver. It is Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Oh, good, the bad, the dumb on a Throwback Thursday. Again, celebrating the 2001 explosion of a dove in a spring training game by Randy Johnson.
Which easily could fit in good, bad, and dumb.
Right, exactly. That Throwback Thursday topic alone fits all three categories. All right, what's the good of the day?
You know what? I didn't realize this until just now, but all three of my stories involve tweets.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy, that Twitter, man. It must be something big.
And yeah, let's face it. Twitter is all full of good, bad, and dumb.
Right, I agree completely.
So the good of the day, Jay Billis came, like, you know, every college analyst does during this time of the, during this week, tries to make a name, but the NFL keeps trumping him. But he came out with his reseeded top 16 teams.
Does he have Duke number one?
I think so. I didn't really look that far because it really doesn't matter. Can you guess what he has? Who he has at 16?
St. Peter's.
Of course he does, right?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
It's a logical choice.
That's a logical choice.
Why is this good? Because St. Peter's Twitter site just simply responded with one word. Coward.
Oh! Yeah, you know what? I get it. No, I get it. You should be like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to put St. Peter's, like, 14.
Yeah.
Right? But you don't want, like, every other team that's left is kind of a strong program.
No, that's true.
And so you don't want to tell, like, Michigan that they're less than St. Peter's, right? Like, you know, so you put in the Peacocks.
Yeah. I love it, though.
I love it, too. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Good for them. They're taking no prisoners.
Yeah. You know?
They're not messing around.
I mean, and why not, right?
Sure.
Just, I mean, just showing people like, hey, you know, look at us. I mean, they have nothing to lose.
Yep.
Because they're not even supposed to be here.
That's 100% correct, man. 100% correct.
Which is one word, coward. It's just too perfect.
Love it. Love it. Good for them. St. Peter should have as much fun as possible. You never know when this is going to happen again. It may not happen at all. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You may never see St. Peter's in the game. I can't remember Florida Gulf Coast again. They probably were in one or two tournaments. I don't remember them. But St. Peter's, you could maybe go next year. Maybe you never go again. Who knows? Have fun while you're at it, though.
Could be 20 years from now.
That's right.
And we'll be like, oh, yeah, that was that team that made that Sweet 16 run, right?
That's right. That's right.
Now their coach is off coaching Duke.
So now what's the bad of the day?
The bad tweet of the day. And it just, I mean, again, it's...
Bad tweets, by the way, are a daily occurrence.
Yeah, this wasn't really a bad tweet. It might have just been bad timing.
Gotcha.
Because former Chicago Bears safety Deion Bush just recently signed with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay.
And
not
he,
bad.
Yeah, and all he did was tweet out, "What's up, Chiefs Kingdom?" Right around the time that Tyreek Hill was traded.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Yeah.
So, a bad start.
Chiefs Kingdom, you know, responded.
Probably slaughtered the poor guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with things like, "Not now, Deion, read the room." Someone said, "Can you play wide receiver?" You know, a few put out, you know, a couple of GIFs. You know, another person, you know, put it simply, you picked a bad day to say hello. Don't take it personally. The kingdom is dealing with some things.
Oh, my God. That's great. That's great.
Just, I mean, you know, you send out a tweet. You're excited to be part of a championship winning team. The guy went from the Bears to the Chiefs.
Yeah.
You know, from a doormat to, you know, a Super Bowl contender.
Good.
He's excited.
He's excited, but he just struck out just a little bit.
He did respond.
Just enough.
He did respond later on yesterday, too. "My bad, y'all. I'll hit y'all back later."
Good for him, yeah. Yeah, stupid me. I'm good. Sorry about that. I'll come back to you later. Yeah, exactly.
But that's like Randy Johnson hitting a bird.
Right.
You know, him sending out a tweet. I mean, he sent out the tweet like around 11:30 yesterday.
Right, right.
Which that was around the time that, you know, Tyreek Hill got traded.
Oh, man. Crazy. Oh, Twitter. Gotta love Twitter. Do you think it'll ever go away? Do you think we'll ever not have it? Like, remember that time we all kind of jumped on a thing?
Like when MySpace was a thing. I mean, I never was a part of MySpace, but no one is anymore.
Right.
Facebook
will it be like that?
Facebook kind of feels like it's going that way.
I feel like Facebook is dying because there's a generation that doesn't use it.
Yeah.
There's the generation that's coming up. Like, my kids don't use it. Like, their friends don't use it.
Right.
Like, they might have accounts. Like, my daughter has a page, and she never is on it. And she's like, "I don't know." I go, "Do you ever use it?" She goes, no. This is not how we talk. This is not how we communicate.
No, I mean, they...
Like Snapchat. Yeah. She goes, "I don't use Facebook at all." And and my kids have both told me that, "Dad, Facebook is for old people." And I'm like, "Really?" And they're like, "Well..." Yeah. I'm like, "Well, all right, fine, I'm old."
No, it blew me away the other day. Like, I was talking to my oldest, and I'm sure you've had the same conversation. It's like, "Oh, you know, did you get to your friend's number or something like that?" It says, "No, I got a Snap."
Yeah.
And I'm like,
"Yeah,
what?"
Yeah, exactly.
You just trade Snaps now? That's how you communicate with you? You don't use phone numbers? Are phone numbers a dead
correct.
Thing now?
Yep, 100% correct. That's exactly what they're doing. So, yeah, maybe one day Twitter will be like, "Remember the time we used to kind of go on this thing and write our thoughts, and then everyone called us a moron that should kill ourselves? Yeah, remember when we all were doing that? And then we don't do that anymore."
Nah.
Yeah. Well,
now we just tweet.
What is the dumb of the day?
The
speaking of Twitter.
The dumb, okay. You can take this two ways, right?
Right.
But yesterday, Jock Peterson took it upon himself to call out three Major League Baseball franchises for their pitiful payrolls.
Good.
Pirates, Orioles, and Guardians.
How did he do that?
He simply, you know, just put down, you know, he showed what the top three Or he copied a picture of like what the top three payrolls are, which are obviously Dodgers, Mets, Yankees.
Right.
And then the bottom three, Guardians, Pirates, Orioles. And all he said is embarrassed for your fan base. Be better. If you can't, sell your team to someone that wants to show the fan base and baseball that they're at least trying to compete. Sorry, unacceptable.
Interesting.
So I don't know which way you want to do this. I agree with him. Because the Orioles are the 30th ranked payroll, have the 30th ranked payroll this season. They're spending just a little over $30 million.
That's crazy. That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
That's an unacceptable amount of money for a Major League Baseball team to be spending on their entire payroll.
And their entire payroll, just under $30 million
this year. When you should have at least one player on your team that makes close to that a year.
Or at least half.
Because he's a star.
At least half that, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's ridiculous.
I mean, I'm not saying you got to go Dodgers payroll, which is over $270 million. I don't mind it. I kind of appreciate that they're trying.
But you know what? You know what it is? This is so screwed up because We talked about this yesterday, too, when we had Patrick Creighton on.
Yeah.
It's like the players fought forever to not have a cap, right? They said, we don't want a salary cap. That's not going to happen. We should be able to get as much money as we want, whenever we can. We don't want anybody to tell us we can't make any money. We've seen in these other leagues, that's not where we're going. Okay. And then you can make an argument for a plus of that. But then the owners came around and said, okay, no salary cap. But then we're going to have this luxury tax. And that's a salary cap.
Yeah. It's a different name.
And the players just went, okay, that's fine. And then these owners go, well, the owners are telling their people in the front office, don't get me anywhere near that cap. Anywhere near that. And the general managers go, that's what we're going to do that now. We're not going to keep star players. Because our owner doesn't want to be anywhere near the cap to the luxury threshold. Some teams, no problem, they'll dive into that for whatever reason. But other teams go, nah, that's not what we're doing. And then these other teams go, you know what, $30 million? That sounds about right.
I mean,
we'll field a team, get all the revenue sharing, all of that with a $30 million payroll.
Yeah.
Like, unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. The NFL forces all of its teams to spend at the money. When you have to spend all of that money,
and that's what it should
be,
right?
To keep it.
That's where it should be. You should be forced to spend an X amount of dollars. Like you have to be here to spend it. We talked about it yesterday too. Earlier this week. That was the whole reasoning behind Brock Osweiler being traded from the Texans to the Browns,
right?
Because even though the Browns probably didn't want to play Osweiler at all, they had to spend some money. And so, we'll just take on that bad contract.
What is the thing in the NBA that teams like when they're sort of kind of rebuilding the team? They like expiring contracts because they have to spend it, but they'd rather spend it on a guy who's out of here as soon as the season's over. So they're like, well, we picked up a draft pick and then two expiring contracts worth $50 million. Because they know, as soon as the season's over, those contracts are on the off the books and they can go spend it. Baseball, it's like, whatever. And here's the thing. It's not like I'm boo hoo poor players. Look, they get paid a lot of money, but this is why I'm unpopular at cocktail parties when the conversation leads to athletes are so overpaid, man. That's ridiculous to get paid $15 million to play a game. That's insane. And I always counter with, where do you want the money to go?
Yeah.
Because where do you want it to go? It's there. It's either going in the owner's pocket or the players that play the game. It's not going to you. Like, don't think for a second if they made $15 an hour, you would go to the games for a buck and a half for a party of five, and your concessions would be 50-cent cheeseburgers. It would still cost a fortune to go to the game. It would still cost a fortune to park. It would still cost a fortune for concessions and merchandise. The owners have no interest in lowering those prices because they're in it to make as much money as possible. So where do you want the money to go? The people on the field or the owners' pockets? Because it's going to either one. So make your pick. Pick. And you've got these owners that are making all of this money on revenue, all of this revenue share, and the players on that particular team are getting nothing. Right? Nothing.
Or they're just, they're not going out seeking players.
Right. Exactly. They're not fielding competitive teams. And yet, baseball goes, nothing we can do about it, man.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, can we force you to pay? Nope. You don't want a salary cap, and we don't want a salary floor.
Dude, there are 14 players making more than the Orioles' entire roster.
Yeah.
And now, I'm not saying that the Orioles, you guys need to go out and, you know, double down your entire roster on one player.
No.
But, you know, you do just do the simple math, right? You're spending $30 million on your entire payroll of, what, 25, 28 players?
Can you have one or two players making $10 million a year?
Right. I mean, you do that simple math. That means everyone is pretty much averaging, their entire roster is making about $1 million each player.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, that's, and we know that there's certain players who are making more, so there's somebody who, they have so many players who are probably making league minimum, it's ridiculous.
And I'm serious. There's a Scrooge McDuck vault. They're diving into it.
Yes.
Like, swimming in cash.
Because exactly. There's nothing you can do about it.
Nothing. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Eric Edholm will join us coming up at 40 past the hour talking NFL. What a crazy 2 weeks. It has been nuts. Absolutely nuts. We'll get the lowdown on his thoughts on all of that. But coming up next, the NBA team that has a lot to be happy about. We'll have that for you next on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. Night 2001. This is a good little number. Didn't Eminem use this for
yes.
Stan?
Yep.
That's right.
This is Dido.
Dido, that's right.
With, thank
Dido.
You.
I'm trying to remember in 2001, my wife was pregnant with our first child, and where was I working? Oh, yeah, I was working with the Tampa Bay Thunderdogs of the new ABA back in the day. Oh, goodness, those good old days. Speaking of basketball, the Brooklyn Nets have got to be thrilled with this, right?
But they're probably saying thank you.
Thrilled, because Eric Adams, the mayor in New York, is now rolling back that vaccine mandate for the city that starts today. And that means Kyrie Irving can now play basketball at the Barclays Center, which just happens to coincide with the stretch run towards the postseason. And oh, by the way, in case you didn't know, that also means unvaccinated Yankees and Mets players can play home games this season.
Coincidence?
So, coincidence? I think not.
Is there any NCAA tournament games in the area?
Right, exactly. So, a couple of things on this, a couple of thoughts on this. One, Kyrie Irving won. He won. He got a lot of flack for this. He got a lot of flack called selfish, right? Had to sit out home games. And Brooklyn struggled without him, and they struggled without Kevin Durant when Durant was hurt. And they went into a spiral.
And, caused a trade. You
know, caused a trade. James Harden is now in Philadelphia.
Yeah, he got frustrated. Ben Simmons. Frustrated with the whole ordeal and said, I'm out.
Ben Simmons, who has not played a second for Brooklyn this year, is not attributed giving him anything. And now Kyrie, who plays well when he plays. Again, 43 points last night in a loss to Memphis, is now going to play consistently. Steve Nash now can take this Brooklyn team and every night roll out the same lineup and consistently road or home will have Brooklyn without any sort of problems in terms of Kyrie. So good for them. Well, they're going to need it because they're in the bottom of the playoff standings in the Eastern Conference. And they're going to try, because look, even with Kyrie full time, they're still going to be running into some teams above them that are going to have home court advantage and are going to be very. Boston Celtics right now playing fantastic basketball. And by the way, did you see the Miami Heat last night blowing up amongst themselves?
Yes.
Jimmy Butler, Eric Spoelstra got involved in it. Udonis Haslam said, I will beat your beep.
Yep.
Like, they're already fighting.
And I believe them.
Yeah, I believe them too. Spoelstra got in on it too. Spoelstra didn't want to fight Jimmy Butler. He's like, you think I'm going to fight you? That's what they had a fan film, a huddle. But Spoelstra was pointing his finger at Butler. I mean, it's all falling apart for the team that was the team to beat not that long ago. Now they've dropped two straight. They're still a tough out. Spoelstra's still, I always say this, Spoelstra's a team that you got to work to beat, man. he knows how to get under your skin. He knows how to do things defensively that'll bog you down. But this infighting can be a real problem for Miami going down the stretch. But this is really great news for Brooklyn. But the other thing about it is, despite the fact that Kyrie did successfully wait this out, was I honestly think that this, I think there's multiple reasons why Eric Adams is rolling back this. And this is, again, for this rule that public workers have to be vaccinated before they go, you know, basically to work, to public buildings. And but yet, over the last few weeks, this has been tremendously exposed on the basketball level. And almost to a point where nobody within the New York offices, including the mayor himself, really couldn't justify it. Because the national media jumped in on it and went, wait, so let me get this straight. Kyrie can attend a basketball game as a fan. He can sit in the arena as a fan, but he can't play. Nope, he can't play. But he can be in the arena. Yes. He can be in the arena, but he can't be in the locker room. Yes. So, again, what's his why is this safer? So he's unsafe to the people who bought a ticket? No. Well, why can't he play? Because he can't. Because he doesn't have the vaccine. Why not? Well, you have to ask him. Yo, so what if Utah comes to town? Okay. What if they have three unvaccinated players? Can they play? Yes. Oh, so they can play, but he can't. Yes. Why? Don't ask us. We don't even know. Is this scientific? I'll be honest with you, not really. Like it does. It started to not make any sense. And I was saying last week when you were on vacation, I think the main thing that this exposed was it wasn't about safety. It wasn't about health. It wasn't about doing the right thing. It was an authoritative position that the city of New York had over its citizens. Because if you played for Utah or Miami or Toronto, Toronto's a bad example. I used it last week, too, because they're probably all vaccinated in Canada. Milwaukee, Denver. If you went to New York City, you were not under the jurisdiction of the city. The city couldn't tell you needed to get a vaccine to play. So you could play. But Kyrie couldn't play, and they claimed it was science. But science had nothing to do with this. Because if it was scientific that Kyrie Irving, unvaccinated, was an unsafe presence on the basketball court, you would say to the opposing team, anybody that you have that's unvaccinated can't play either. But that's not what they did. So I think overall, the city of New York was feeling this heat. There were way too many videos, way too many tweets, way too many social media posts of Kyrie Irving attending these games at the Barclays Center as a fan. And then people were like, and he can't play because why? And it also, I mean, again, don't get me wrong. The vaccine mandate wasn't a sports thing. It was for everybody across the city. But it still didn't stand up to the scientific scrutiny. It didn't seem to make any sense. If Kyrie could sit in the stands, then he was, quote unquote, endangering the people around him, who all probably had the vaccine. I mean, this was a mess. It was a PR mess, and I think they finally went, this doesn't make any sense. And never underestimate the influence of sports in our culture either. I think it also, when it was hit, like, hey, you know, there are a couple of Yankees that are not vaccinated. There's a couple of Mets players that aren't vaccinated. And you know what? 82 games is a lot. 81 games is a lot of games, so we'd like them to play them, please. You think if you're Steve Cohen, you don't put a phone call into somebody political? You think Steve Cohen just sits back and takes it? You think Hank Steinbrenner just does that? You're totally mistaken. Those guys probably work for those people. Are you kidding me? Those politicians probably work for Steve Cohen. Are you kidding? You think Steve Cohen's like, nothing I can do. I'm a billionaire. I have no power. I have no say. No, he picks up a phone call and goes, yeah, about this vaccination mandate thing. Anytime we end this pretty soon, I got a baseball team to run. And they're like, yeah, sure. You know what? Actually, it's kind of stupid. That was kind of a dumb idea anyway, Steve. We'll get right back to you. So good luck, Brooklyn, in the playoffs, because now you got your full force ahead of you. Eric Edholm next.
is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. By the way, Throwback Thursday 2001, this date Randy Johnson killed a bird in Tucson. So this is the music you're hearing from 2001. Eric Edholm joins us, Yahoo Sports, because, man, it has been just nuts these last 2 weeks. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, this offseason has been, you know, like Randy Johnson killing a bird. It's been crazy. It's been like, what just happened? I love it.
The Tyreek Hill trade, did this come out of nowhere, or did you guys get an inkling that this was something that was brewing or in the works?
Well, not specifically to him necessarily, but I was talking to an evaluator a couple days. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but basically right after the Davante Adams trade happened, and he said, I'm telling you, you're going to see some teams try to offload these sort of top of the market wide receivers or players who are due to have contract extensions. You can look, there's a list of some quality talented receivers who are, you know, due for extensions this summer and stuff. So, you know, basically suggesting that not everybody's going to be on board with this. I didn't come up with Hill's name. I didn't think of him immediately, but it certainly makes sense. There's two schools of thought. Like, perhaps this is a position where you can find sort of 80% of elite for 65% of the cost, you know, and you might be able to save some money. Or you could ask yourself, do the Chiefs win that game against the Bills without Tyreek Hill on the field? You know what I mean? There's two sort of schools of thought here about just how important that game-changing receiver is and how much they're worth. So fascinating kind of off-season story that's developed here.
What is he going to in Miami, and how much pressure now is on Tua Tagovailoa? You got to get this guy the ball now. They're not paying him to run routes. They're paying him to catch the football. You better get him the football.
Right. If after, you know, three games, he's got 11 catches for, you know, 185 yards, I think people are going to be like, all right, this is not the same, right? And
right. You
have Jaylen Waddle, too, and he wasn't used last year the way he was used at Alabama. He was used in a different way. He was more of the, you know, catch the quick hitch and try to, you know, make yards after the catch. And he was great at it. I mean, he was one of the best rookie receivers and, you know, clearly showed some burst and some value. And now you have a receiver with sort of similar skill sets who is best used in a vertical offense. And the thing about Tua that gives me hope, number one, Mike McDaniel, what he can do with him. And, you know, obviously the designs that, you know, that he's learned from Kyle Shanahan, that he's come up with his own ideas. A better run game should help him out, too. A better offensive line. Teron Armstead is a huge addition for them. And I would argue they got him at below what I thought he would get. So, and in college, Tua was a great deep ball thrower. I mean, that's the one thing I keep kind of coming back to. Everyone talks about arm strength and all this. You know, the deep ball isn't necessarily about arm strength. It's about touch, timing, placement, and, you know, all that. And you've got to have the horses to run. Well, they've got him now. So it absolutely does fall on Tua to step up. And, you know, we could see him become a breakout star, or we could see him become the scapegoat.
And on the flip side, Kansas City. I was talking about this earlier. Like, the Titans, when they lost Derrick Henry, they tried to just match statistically the output with two running backs, even though they lost the sort of game-breaking threat that Henry was. This is a little different because it's not statistically that makes him so good. It's what he can do on any given play. How does Kansas City fill that role, or do they just change the way they run their offense?
Yeah, I think there's got to be some kind of stylistic change of some sort. And, you know, I mean, it's not quite the same when Andy Reid had DeSean Jackson, and then DeSean was out of the lineup, and then, you know, he was sort of persona non grata for a little bit there or whatever in Philly. But, you know, I do think there's that aspect of now you're going to have to kind of reimagine things a little bit, because what made Kansas City so dangerous is that, you know, you can double Hill, and technically you can also double Kelce too, but that leaves everybody else wide open and pack and create and, you know, and find other guys. And that was always the sort of the best way to go, I think, in a lot of ways, was force the third guy to do something. But still, they found ways to win more often than not, and were dangerous no matter what kind of tricks you did defensively to him. what draws their eyes now? Kelce and who, right? And even with the high draft picks, you know, the best option to replace him in the draft would be Jameson Williams, and he's got an ACL injury that can keep him out till September, October, who knows, you know, and he may not be full strength till next year. So I really don't know. I think a veteran has to be added here and help from the draft. I don't exactly know how they're going to do it. But, you know, nobody's going to get excited if Marquez Valdez-Scantling is the answer, or if, you know, some other second-tier kind of free agent comes in and, you know, and adds a talented body to the room. Nobody's going to be fearing them the way that Hilda created that fear.
What is your big takeaway, though? What is your big takeaway from all of this? Like, when you look at the big picture of the way the business is being conducted in this league, I mean, again, this is sort of an outlier to a lot of off seasons that are, you know, got news, but not like this, with quarterbacks all over the place shifting and the way draft picks are getting moved and teams are like, sure, take them all as long as we can get this one player. Is there a big picture takeaway of the way these teams are doing business now than they did in the past?
Well, yeah, I think there's just a little more openness to trading than there once was. And, you know, I mean, I remember having a conversation with Ron Wolf probably about 15, 20 years ago. And he said, like, NFL people don't like to trade, right? Obviously, that's gone completely the other direction. So that's certainly part of it. I think, as we talked before, just sort of the value of the quote, you know, the fantasy football type positions, right? Yeah. I mean, it's a 7-on-7 football world in which we live. And you see, you know, kids growing up. What do they want to do? They want to play quarterback, and if not, they want to play receiver. So that certainly has put a huge emphasis on those two positions in the NFL, in the talent pool that we get every year, whether it's the draft or free agency. I mean, those two positions, I think, as a whole, from the bottom up, have improved. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's more of just a kind of a willingness, especially with the Rams winning the Super Bowl and kind of the way they went about doing it. You could argue the Bengals' approach was different, too. Both teams took very, I would say, unconventional routes towards building rosters, at least for the Bengals in the last couple years with their free agency sprees. It was very uncharacteristic for them. And, you know, the Rams, we know their, you know, modus operandi, which is to trust that the scouts can find talents in the lower rounds. We'll go out and use our assets to procure, you know, known quantities, veterans, superstars, whatever you want to call them, and build our roster that way. And it was successful. So I think there's a little bit of that, you know, less need sort of, you know, creating a blueprint of sorts that I think other teams are at least willing to try.
The domino effect of Deshaun Watson getting sort of, well, I mean, I don't know how to put it, like the criminal element of these cases was thrown out. And then all of a sudden teams were like, okay, let's talk. And now you got Matt Ryan in Indianapolis, and Baker Mayfield's saying thank you to fans, even though he's still in Cleveland. And Watson's now one of the highest paid players in the game. And all of these domino effects, is all of this in the way it's been played out, is it a good look for the league in terms of the way Deshaun Watson is still going to have to deal with this issue?
Yeah, I mean, right. Not only will he have to address it at some point, you know, I think there's going to be some tough questioning. There's also the matter of, you know, how long do these civil cases sort of linger? Right. Are there settlements imminent on any or part or most of the cases? I think that's sort of a big deal, too, because once those cases settle, you know, the ones that do, and I'm guessing there'll be some who won't, some of the 22 accusers, I don't know what percentage, but I would guess more than not we'll look to settle, just because I think that's, you know, especially with the criminal charges having been not been carried through, I think that a lot of them are going to realize, you know, some of that leverage is maybe gone, even if, you know, the assumption of guilt might still be there for a lot of people. But yeah, there is a lot of fallout from this. I really think the Watson move, both the situation, the unprecedented nature of a young quarterback having to sit out a year and then being rewarded, like, you know, the prodigal son coming home to recapture his kingdom almost.
Yeah.
And, you know, the contract, right? I mean, we have talked enough about the fully guaranteed deal. Like, we thought Kirk Cousins' deal a few years ago when he went to Minnesota was a big deal, $90 million right. Guaranteed. You know, this is totally different. This is $230 million. So, that aspect, and then also the fact that, you know, he's got a suspension coming. We don't know how long. A lot of eyes are going to be on that case, and the critics are going to be waiting to pounce if it's not long enough, and if he doesn't show the right contrition when he does speak. So, yeah, this is a massive story that continues to kind of unfold here.
Eric Edholm again, Yahoo Sports. Always good having you on. Thank you as much for your time in the morning on such a busy time for this league. What, maybe some point you can hang out with your family and go on vacation.
I would like to think so. I'm thinking maybe May of 23 or something like that. That might be the first thing, but I'll make it work.
All right, my man. And you know what? We'll probably call you on vacation for whatever reason that pops up.
Please do. I'll have it on DSG, right?
Yeah. You got it, man. You got it. Good talking to you, Eric. Always good chatting up
with you.
You got it. Eric Edholm joining us on Wake Up Call. Yeah, busy time. If you're an NFL reporter, this is absolutely crazy. You never want to be that far from your phone. Like a couple of years ago, I was on a cruise and, you know, like there was no reason in my phone. And I remember turning it off and putting it like in the drawer or wherever we stored it. And I didn't need to be on my phone. So I didn't have the phone withdrawal. Like, you know, my kids were like, I wish I had my phone. But if you're an NFL reporter, like even when you know people are in your business or covering for you, they're like, I got the beat until you come back from your vacation. You still don't want to miss out. You don't want to miss out on whatever big thing happens when you're on vacation. And the NFL does this. It spits out news all the time, constantly, even when you think news shouldn't be made. And in all reality, this is a week, right? This is a week, or the last couple of weeks, it's free agency. It's, you know, this is when movements are going to be made. And as he said, if teams are now willing to trade, this is about when they would start doing it. It's the start of the business and all of that. But this league will make news even when it's supposed to be dead, even though it's supposed to be quiet, even if nothing is supposed to happen, it can still find a way to make a bit of news. I'll never forget when Andrew Luck announced his retirement. It was kind of a boring preseason. We were kind of rolling through these games. And then out of nowhere, it was like, yep, Andrew Luck, done. Just came out, just hit us like a ton of bricks.
Yeah, it almost feels like that's right. The time these guys can take vacations during preseason.
Right, right, because preseason's kind of a dead time. Teams are just working on a couple things. They'll make a few cuts and whatnot.
Yeah, but the cuts, then, you don't really know the guys.
Yeah, right. They're like, here's some cuts of some guys, and all right, they're going to, you know, finalize the roster in a couple days. Then you might have a moment where a star quarterback goes, yeah, I've had enough of this. I'm done. I'm not playing anymore. And you go, oh, gosh, now it's breaking news. All right, thanks to Eric Edholm again on Yahoo Sports. On Progressive Guest Line, quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive New Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Eric Edholm, Yahoo Sports. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Robert on Twitter on Throwback Thursday. Palace of Auburn Hills Arena, functional, nice, with modern amenities that didn't stop the wrecking ball in its demise. All right, so that's a pretty good one. It's not Randy Johnson blowing up a bird good.
No.
But it's a good one, Robert. Well done.
Yeah.
We also were going to do the Exxon Valdez.
That's right.
Spilling a boatload of oil, no pun intended,
and
into
you
the
know
Alaskan
what?
Waters.
That boat killed a lot more birds.
That's right. That boat killed a lot more birds, but we're just celebrating one bird right now.
Because, you know, oil spills, that's more believable.
That's just crazy. That's crazy.
That could happen.
I don't know this. How do you clean up oil spills?
Like I don't know.
When the BP oil spill happened or the tanker, like, what do you, like, how do you gather the oil back?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess eventually.
I'm not smart with that.
Do you just
give up? Do you just hope nature just takes care of it for you?
Well, I mean, that's what's happened, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't hear about any.
Nature just dilutes it. And,
I mean, is there a huge environmental impact to Prince William Sound?
Yeah, good point.
I remember at the time it was, you know, it was like, oh, my God, this is catastrophic.
Yeah.
But here we are, what? That happened in 89, and
89,
we're
yeah.
30 years later.
All right. Coming up next hour, we'll talk more about the Tyreek Hill trade. So I do have to ask you this. I don't know if I have to turn in my man card on this or not.
All right.
Okay. Last fall of 2020, I suffered a dislocated knee. Mm-hmm. And later in, as I was recovering from it, I wasn't recovering as fast as I thought, and I did get it checked out, and I found out that I needed surgery. So in February of 21, I had knee surgery. And so for a number of months, I was sort of, you know, hobbling and, you know, didn't really, you know. So we paid a lawn guy to do the lawn. Now, I love mowing my lawn. I love weed whacking and edging the driveway and, you know, blowing out all the debris, and I like doing that. But this lawn guy came because I couldn't do it anymore, and my son was in college and whatnot, so I didn't have anybody to mow the lawn because I was at a knee problem. And my thought was I was going to use the guy, and then as soon as I could mow the lawn again, I would do it. The problem is every time he comes to mow the lawn, my lawn looks fantastic. It looks amazing. It looks amazing. Like, he's using real professional equipment. So we're keeping him, again, even though I'm healthy enough to mow my own lawn. Is that the wrong thing to do?
No.
It isn't?
No.
The lawn looks...
That's not man card worthy.
Okay, good, good. Because I told my wife, I'm like, if I mowed my lawn, that would be great. But this guy's making my lawn look like a carpet. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And he does the edging perfectly, and everything is neat and tidy. And I get my Saturdays free. And I feel bad because I feel like I should be out there mowing like a man. But this guy, beautiful.